I want to welcome Michael Darda, Chief Economist and Chief Market Strategist from MKM Partners. He's here to talk to us about Europe. And Mike, I know I've been reading some of your research lately. I know you are watching the stress in the credit markets. Today, we are seeing some of that funding stress. I mentioned LIBOR just before the break. We're also learning from the European Central Bank that demand for dollars is rising. And these are worrisome signals.
They sure are. Thanks for having me on. It's interesting. So, you know, equity markets have gotten more optimistic in recent weeks that maybe European political leaders are getting closer to getting in front of the crisis. And we've seen that reflected in some narrowing in the sovereign bond spreads for, say, Italy and Spain. Today they were up again, but very little, if any, improvement in those bank funding stress measures. So in the Eurozone, the euro interest rate swap spreads really haven't come down at all, still at crisis levels. You mentioned LIBOR. It's been actually creeping up in dollars.
July
as well.
2009 high today.
Yep. So financial conditions are tightening around the globe, even in the U.S. It's much more acute in the Eurozone because that's the source of the problem. But I'm very skeptical that the political leadership over there is on the cusp of doing something that will really turn the tide in a meaningful and sustained way. I think a lot of this comes down to how aggressive the ECB is willing to get, and I guess we'll find out more about that tomorrow.
We're already learning that the European Central Bank is speaking about additional moves to announce tomorrow. According to our Bloomberg exclusive story that spoke with people familiar with the talks, three people tell us that options on the table include loosening collateral criteria and other ways to sort of get banks to access cheaper cash and prevent a credit crunch. Mike, we saw the Fed move with five other central banks, including the ECB, last week. That seemed to relieve some of the tension. So why are we seeing so much tension?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, the question isn't whether the ECB will act. They've already started. They at least had one modest rate reduction already in Mario Draghi's first meeting as ECB president. So they will take future measures. But the key question for markets now is, will those measures be enough, soon enough, to turn the tide? And I still think that the answer is probably no. You have a lot of contractionary and deflationary forces underway in the Eurozone. Fiscal austerity is a contractionary force, all things equal. Bank balance sheet deleveraging is a deflationary force. Stress in credit markets can be a deflationary force if it hurts the velocity of money. So the only institution that really stands between a deflationary collapse and serial defaults in
the
Eurozone
ECB.
Is the ECB.
Right.
And what they have done has been very reluctant and very late. So it's not a question of whether they lower rates or, you know, loosen collateral rules or try to, you know, make additional efforts to help bank funding, but will it be aggressive enough soon enough to turn the tide? They need to get in front of the curve. And unfortunately, the history of the ECB as an institution, I don't think, leaves a lot of hope here that they're likely to do something incredibly dramatic and really front-run expectations. Usually they've disappointed in that regard.
Okay, but we have seen a little bit of open-mindedness from Mario Draghi. He cut rates on his first move. He suggested that the European Central Bank is open to doing more, but we have to see action from the fiscal authorities first, and that's what Friday's all about. That's the optimistic case.
Exactly. No, that's a good point. And, you know, cutting rates is better than raising them. In Trichet's last two maneuvers as ECB president, they raised rates. I think that probably will go down in history as the biggest monetary policy blunder since the Fed doubled reserve
requirement. Yeah, you're not the first
ratios.
To say that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. If you look at those two rate increases, that was literally the moment that the run started on Spanish and Italian debt markets. And because of the credit stress that's been underway and now the economic downward spiral, they're going to have to do a lot more easing to get in front of the curve than they did tightening in terms of knocking the economy down. So Draghi has his work cut out for him. Now, he is moving to ease policy. That is appropriate. We can certainly hope that he will be aggressive enough. But I think that, you know, a sober view of this thing would probably lead one to be a bit cautious in terms of where we are now.
Are you nervous about the expectations that have been building in financial markets leading up to this Thursday and Friday? For instance, the Italian 10-year yield, which we're all glued to, has moved from 7% last week at this time to 5.9%.
Yeah. So a big move there. We saw something very similar this summer when the ECB first announced its bond purchase program would be expanded to Spain and Italy from some of the other peripheral countries. And so those yields moved down sharply. The spreads narrowed, but it didn't last, did it? Because the follow-up wasn't there. So, you know, I think what will be required here is a dramatic, draconian, and open-ended commitment from the ECB, and they've been reluctant to do that. Draghi's sort of been flirting with financial markets, saying, okay, if the Italians and others step forward with more aggressive fiscal austerity, the ECB will potentially be more accommodative. But will they be accommodative enough to allow fiscal austerity to work? Fiscal austerity can work if monetary policy is appropriately accommodative, but it won't work and can't work with tight money. And that's really the crucial question going forward.
We're speaking about the European debt crisis and what we might expect from tomorrow and beyond, Friday and going into next year, out of European leaders to fight the worsening of the crisis. With Michael Darda, MKM Partners, he's an economist and senior strategist. And Michael, it sounds like you don't think it is going away anytime soon, but this notion of central banks stepping in beyond Europe, you already told us what the European Central Bank needs to do. Other central banks could get more active and involved and ease further as well.
Indeed. So we've already seen that with the Bank of England. What they're trying to do basically is fiscal austerity on the one side and quantitative easing on the other side. I'll have to say that does make some sense if you have an economy that's dealing with structural budget issues and you just don't have the room to be ramping up debt ratios indefinitely with fiscal stimulus, yet the economy is demand constrained. And to some extent that's happening in the U.S., although you know we haven't really moved into the austerity environment yet. That may happen with political gridlock in Washington, meaning if policymakers do nothing, you'll ultimately end up with both tax increases and spending cuts. In terms of the Federal Reserve and further easing, I mean, the last maneuver was Operation Twist. I think that, you know, has not been effective. There's some discussion about the Fed potentially purchasing assets, meaning starting to expand the balance sheet again, likely would be focused on mortgage-backed securities purchases. I really don't think that trigger is going to be pulled unless it looks like the U.S. indeed is slipping into a recession and or you have, you know, Europe really coming apart at the seams and delivering a global systemic shock that looks like it's a threat to the Fed's dual mandate in terms of keeping prices stable and keeping, you know, employment at relatively high levels. And they're certainly, you know, failing on that second mandate in the here and now. So, you know, we could see some additional efforts taken by the Fed, but I think not, you know, not with the stock market rallying like it has over the course of the last week in the macro data in the U.S., at least recently, surprising to the upside. The consensus has sort of stepped away from the recession view and now believes that, you know, that the economy is going to just sort of move along here, at least at a moderate clip. I'm not sure that's going to prove to be the case. I'm concerned about the tightening in financial conditions and the stresses, even in some of the U.S. credit market indicators. So if we do
like
see further,
LIBOR,
you know, it's interesting. If you look at the high yield debt market, spreads have basically doubled. And, you know, that kind of a thing is a threat to the business cycle. So the credit markets will lead the business cycle, meaning production, sales, employment, all of those indicators that we associate with economic health, or the converse. Those are coincident indicators. So when you have a lot of stress in credit markets, and we've seen more significant stress, at least in those key indicators, such as the high yield market, than we did last year, I think we need to hold off on assuming that the economy's out of the woods simply because we've seen this bounce back in some of the data in September, October, and in November. And I think most of that is really a snapback effect from some of the temporary headwinds earlier in the year, the Japan earthquake, the oil squeeze. So those supply shocks are gone now, but we have a potential negative demand shock underway from tighter financial conditions. And if that's revealed in the coincident data going forward, then we might be closer to the Fed acting.
It's certainly a scary scenario that you're painting here, Mike. Just talk a little bit about what it actually means for the real economy that we see stress in the credit markets, credit squeeze, funding pressures. What does this all mean and how does it trickle through?
So You know, essentially it means that, financial conditions are tightening. You know, in economic terms, it's basically a threat to the velocity of money. So if there is a retreat from risk and a dash for cash, if economic actors want to hold money instead of spending it, releasing it, and investing it, then aggregate demand will falter. And those credit market indicators are very important in terms of assessing the potential for something like that to unfold in real time. They do tend to lead, where a lot of the data that economists are focused on tends to be lagging or coincident. So we have to watch this and be aware of it. Certainly the Fed's watching it and is aware of it. But the Fed's sort of in a political pickle to some degree now. We're moving into an election cycle. You've got all this goofy campaign rhetoric and attacks on Bernanke from some of the political candidates who obviously don't want the Fed to do anything to help the economy right before an election that they're hoping to win. And the Fed doesn't want to make waves like that in any case or be accused of doing something for political purposes. So I think the bar is going to be a little higher in terms of seeing weak data for the Federal Reserve to act. But I certainly wouldn't rule it out because I don't have quite the rosy scenario that the consensus is seeming to embrace at this moment.
And you still say there is a what percent chance of a recession in the United States?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The consensus, I think, was around 1 in 3 mm-hmm. and probably has dropped to like 1 in 10 now. I still think it's, you know, I still think we have a unfortunately elevated risk, you know, 1 in 3, 1 in 4, somewhere in there. It'll critically depend on whether the credit markets, you know, ease from here or re-tighten with a lot of turbulence from overseas. And so I think it's still an open question, but just based on the financial conditions tightening the way they have over the course of the last few months, I think we're in for some negative surprises on the macro data as we move into the first quarter, and I think that's baked into the cake. So, you know, this recent celebration about the economy sort of having dodged a bullet and avoided the recession scenario could prove to be a bit premature.
Clearly, you're focused on the credit markets. Are there any others that make sense to you right now? Do equities make sense?
Well, I mean, these markets, you know, cannot and do not decouple indefinitely. But if we do see them moving, you know, in variant ways, that's typically a sign that something could be wrong. And usually, at least over the course of the last few years, if the equity markets and credit markets are going two different ways, it's usually the equity market that has it wrong. In this case, you know, we've had the equity markets rally pretty aggressively off of the October lows. The credit markets in some cases are still deteriorating. I mean, you mentioned LIBOR, which is resetting higher on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't look like it looks in Europe and the U.S. Certainly, I don't want to, you know, overplay the weakness here. The credit markets are far worse in Europe. But we're seeing an ongoing and subtle tightening of financial conditions and deterioration in key credit indicators in the U.S., and I think that should give us some pause. So, the equity market at these levels, a lot of the clients I interact with believe equities are cheap, and that's a reason to be bullish. But
you don't buy that.
Well, cheap relative to what? You know, the market's cheap relative to record after-tax profit margins, and if you think those margins are sustainable indefinitely, then maybe the market is incredibly cheap, but history would suggest that that's not the case, that there is a mean reversion, and if you adjust if you normalize or adjust for the business cycle, then equities are about at average valuations, meaning they could certainly fall from here if we get hit with some surprisingly bad news.
But if you look around the world, where do you want to be? Do you agree with the majority of the global investors that we surveyed here at Bloomberg that the U.S. is where it's at in terms of equities, bonds, and the U.S. dollar?
Well, I don't believe in the idea of decoupling. You know, we started to actually hear that word again as the
in other words, the U.S. outperforming Europe and going in another direction.
Yeah, outperforming, relative performance is one thing, but decoupling, meaning that, you know, that U.S. equities would be able to actually advance in a sustainable way if Europe and emerging markets are falling apart, I think that's
right.
Not correct. So, you know, it's outperformance can be relative, meaning that, you know, we could all be faltering and the U.S. is falling at a slower pace than we're outperforming. That's not really going to make investors happy. My view is still a cautious one on risk assets here. I'm still very concerned, i.e. bearish on Europe. I'm worried about what the China landing looks like. I think it will be harder and sharper in terms of the slowdown than many expect. So I'm not really bullish on these cyclical equity sectors. I still think caution is warranted here, having cash levels that are higher, and if you are invested, to be invested in some of those more stable, less cyclical equity sectors.
Wow, this is completely different conversation than where we started at the 10 a.m. hour with Chris Rupke of Bank of Tokyo Mitsubishi UFJ. Mike, he's very optimistic about the U.S. economy. He says 10-year Treasury yields are going to 3% next year.
Well, I guess, it takes two sides to make a market.
So would you want to be a buyer of Treasuries?
Well, Treasury yields are low because the economy is depressed. So if Chris is right we're in the throes of a sustainable reacceleration here, then yields would certainly go higher. If I'm right and the economy falters here, then rates are probably going to stay low.
Looking across at the rates in Europe, we've seen Italy narrow. 5.9% is the 10-year. In Spain, 5.3%. Will these be the indicators that you check on Monday morning? This is what Tony Crescenzi of PIMCO told us he was going to look at. It sounds like you're a little more focused on the credit markets and behind the scenes in the funding world.
Absolutely. So, the source of the stress in the Eurozone banking system is really the stress in sovereign debt markets, and the banks own a lot of that debt. So they have a capital and collateral problem that's associated with that debt. So we can watch those sovereign spreads. We watch the bank funding spreads. And then really at the heart of this crisis, you have a collapse in Eurozone nominal GDP. So unless that's rectified, it's going to be very difficult for peripheral countries to right-size their budgets, meaning deleveraging is essentially impossible if your income is falling. And that's where a responsible, credible, and aggressive central bank comes in. Fiscal austerity can work, but it will not work with monetary policy not responding in the appropriate fashion.
All right, Michael Darda, thanks so much for all of your insights. Mike Darda of MKM Partners. Keep an eye on the credit markets.